The idea is you get out of North Ministry, you start your journey, you become a journeyman.
That's the idea.
Okay, let's stay high level, okay? You're getting into too much detail.
Okay.
What changed? Why are you back?
He just kept begging me to come back and like, dude, all right.
Welcome back to the Passion for Craft podcast. We're here in King's Chapel. Michael Burry's back with us again. Going to explain a lot of the timber framing as we get up to the upper levels and just some of the historical significance of this place. But just to kind of give everyone a lowdown, this is the chapel that was built for the King of England. So whatever he was to come here to Boston, this would be the place where he would worship. This is kind of the much richer chapel out of a lot of the churches in the area. This was the one where all the money was. This was the who's who.
Old money.
You see these, all these little pulpits?
Pew boxes, yeah.
All these pew boxes would have been reserved for different people. You'd pay a fee annually and then weekly to have your spot, your status, essentially. And so as you came into money and as you ran out of money, you would gain and lose a pulpit spot based on where you were in the chapel. And this was a lot wealthier. Whenever we were here on our initial visit, they were saying that the cost to get into here was like two or three times whatever it was at the next chapel over. So this is just a phenomenal church, just really great.
Wait. When is this date? What are we looking at here?
1740.
Yep. Okay, and I'm seeing a picture like this, and the first one was very different than this. So this would be like a second church.
What I'm told is that they built this around that first church. First church was small enough that they actually built it around it so they could continue worshiping while this was being constructed, then dismantled it from the inside. If you go down below here, there's some evidence of that.
Interesting.
So what in here are we looking at that's part of that original church versus the exterior? Is that this interior line is church one and then the next jump out is church two?
Well, I think the church one was within those columns,
mm-hmm.
but those columns are pretty spectacular in terms of, you know, what we'll see up above is the tops of the columns, more is intended into it, but there's a couple of them that show the evidence of that, of being hollowed out with a auger so that it would shrink around that hollow zone.
So it's one tree. Each one of those columns is one tree, and we're going to see that later on just as we get to do that. And we should probably go now look at the base of some of these columns, and then we can move up front and kind of look at some of the architectural detailing that they've done.
Well, it's interesting. The carving here is kind of in the style of Grinling-Gibbons because it's hollowed out and kind of back cut and everything else. I don't think it is him. It's too late for it to be him. But he certainly established with the flowers, it actually looked like they stick out from the wall and the mm-hmm. things that, it almost looks like a pendant hanging these leaves and everything else. That's his influence.
That was something McIntyre did as well. He back cut a lot of his carvings to really give that extra.
But he's a later period, right? He's a neoclassical period. It's spectacular.
All right, let's go check out these little hollowed out. I think it's right over there. All right, so here we are at the base of these columns. What are we looking at here, Michael?
So this is the form that they left the woods in. So if you look at in the raking light, there's scallops from the hewing. So they found a really good quality tree, white pine tree. You can tell by the grain patterns, it's white pine and the patina that's on it. Felled that tree, checked it out, make sure it didn't fracture, then hewed it into an octagon. And then, you know, they had mast ships that were, you know, designed to carry long timbers, slide onto one of those mast ships, bring it down from wherever north of here, and then right, worked here in this space.
So then the base, if that's your column there, it's kind of coming up in this area. The attic base here would have been added onto.
So this could be a ring that's, I've seen this done before in other, you know, situations on a house that we have in Hanover where, you know, you're probably turning this on a lathe. I mean, it sounds pretty amazing that they would be able to turn this on a lathe, but they very likely did or, you know, worked it in facets. But, you know, cut a collar in here into which they inserted these parts, turned this separately or added these on. Because it stands about beyond this octagon, so they had to add that in because it didn't have the diameter.
Well, one thing, just being a geek, a classical geek, this is called an apophagy, where that cove comes up and hits the edge of the column. And the thing that drives me crazy about new cheap columns, it's just a little collar slid over top of it, and there's a big gap at the top. The fact that they did, you know, notch in there so that that could fit around there, understanding that classical detail and getting that right, it's really special.
Yeah, it gives it the illusion that it's part of it, mm-hmm. like it's all one.
Well, I need to apologize to my son because I said there's no way that this is a solid piece of tree, solid piece of wood, and it does appear that these are all crazy tall trees that were, I'm still getting my head around it.
It's also interesting, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, but that looks like they notched into that tree to kind of support
story. That's part of the structure of the galleries.
What?
I mean, that's next level scribe work.
Right, I mean, we'll talk about like making a mistake. You know, these guys just probably worked on this thing for like 3 weeks straight and you cut it wrong. You're fired.
Michael, do you know the hewing time, what that would look like back then? I mean,
well, you have a group of hewers out in the woods, felling the tree initially, then snapping lines and hewing it. I don't know. The only thing I can compare with is what
you're probably the fastest hewer in recent history. So what was your quickest time?
Well, this is a little while ago, but I needed 32-foot plates for my shop.
Yeah.
So they're 7x8s. Hurricane Bob came through, knocked a bunch of really nice white pine trees down from near my house. So
Thank you, Bob.
Permission, yeah. And I hewed out a 7x8, 32 feet long in 6 hours.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow.
So crazy.
Wow. So you don't think this is like obviously the shaping and all the other stuff, but actually to hew it wouldn't have been that crazy.
Yeah, probably maybe a day or two for experienced hewers. We don't know how big the diameter was before they started either. That's because you really want heartwood.
I got to say, this is so funny because Michael just taught our class how to hew, and we had probably 2 days to do it. And so the first day, it was like a half day that we spent doing this thing, and we got maybe half of a tree done. Maybe between 13 of our classmates. And then day two, we went out there and, you know, we got maybe 4 sides done total on a bunch, like 3 different trees. So the thought of Michael doing a full 32-foot long one in that's crazy.
Generation snowflake. Here.
That's really crazy.
That's our generation. We're weak.
I will say that because this is the pedestal height, this would establish the chair rail height. This is about 4 feet, right? But look how tall my ceilings are. So don't go putting your freaking chair rail too high. This works because it's such a tall ceiling.
I've done this high in 9-foot ceiling rooms for real, like for the Karens of this world.
Well, let's go take a peek at this front edge and then,
Yeah.
We'll move upstairs. So we're just kind of looking at all these final details. This is obviously the front. This is the centerpiece of where everyone would kind of be looking, this and this, because this is where the sermons would have been given from. But I think one thing that just whenever we were visiting here, the attention to detail on a lot of these different things, right? These have all been turned, but then carved afterwards. And then you see that design all along the balustrade up there. There are just so many different levels of detail all throughout this structure. That's just really cool. Speaks to a lot
well,
of money.
Well, you look at that stair rail design and that kind of twisted baluster and turned and having a different shape and a different style with each different tread, that's kind of really high style Georgian. There's just great details to look at here that, you know, a lot of fun things. It's almost, there's a lot of Baroque stuff in here and even Rococo kind of carving and stuff like that that's going on. And so it's a rich style. So yeah, it's
maybe another fun detail is look at those curved windows mm-hmm. up there. The whole sash is curved, so yeah, that's even great. A fun
build project
thing. Yeah. So Michael, I think my stairs are gonna look like that.
I get started. Yeah.
I did buy a lathe the other day, so that'll help.
Oh, good.
All right, well, we're gonna go upstairs and then we're gonna kind of continue from there. This is back in King's Chapel. We're in the second story now. We're looking at these columns because this is one giant tree that's been brought from the ground floor all the way up into the ceiling. So if you see even that plaster work up there, it shoots up probably another 4 feet past that into the attic. And so Michael was talking about this, but basically you can see this line where it cuts off.
There's a line right there.
Yeah.
Down below, there's an access panel that in the base of the column, it shows that they were hewn to an octagon initially and brought out of the woods and then brought down here and worked. So there's parts of this Corinthian capital that had to be added on. So there's a line, probably animal hide glue was used to add onto it. So they create that whole capital.
Because it extended past what they had hewed, their design for this fluted and then Corinthian acanthus leaves that are going up here.
What kind of wood is this?
White pine.
White pine. Easy to carve that, or?
It's really easy to carve. A lot of ship's carvings and statues were done in white pine.
Well, white pine is easy to carve, but it's not easy to carve with a good finish on it, right? Like it can split out.
Well, if you do it green,
you.
I think you get a good finish, and you can scrape it with scrapers
as
well.
Do you think they would have carved it green?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, at least in what we've done before.
Yeah, well, I guess they would have had to if it was just brought from the. You're not gonna wait 8 years for this to dry out before you use it.
Right.
I think this is the most beautiful architectural place I've ever been in my entire life.
Yeah.
Like, really?
Hands down. Yeah. I like seeing all this, the shadow line, like of all the details here. This
is why you travel,
why'd
guys.
You say really, like that, like this is not high on your list. Like really, you like this?
That's nothing. It's just the King's Travel.
You need to travel more. That's what I'd say. It's spectacular. It's great. But I wouldn't say I wouldn't have made that comment. That's why I said that.
I'm from Texas, Brent.
Well, I grew up in Texas as well. And so, no, I get it. And I'm not trying to be right? But I'm also like, you need to travel more because this is good, but you need it. Because in England, they'd done this with stone and marble, right? And so it's just like,
I think
just
I prefer the wood,
level.
Though.
The wood has a wood different guy. Set of problems that you encounter with it, right? Like finding that big of a piece of stone as well is hard. But finding one tree like that seems impossible.
No, what they've overcome and everything else, it's amazing.
Because it's not like they did it one time. They did it 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, you know.
Like you need to, just perspective so that I'm not a big jerk. Like you need to go to the Vatican.
Okay.
Right? You need to go that Michelangelo and that Notre Dame. Right? You need to go to some places where it's another 400 or 500 years old or than that, or 1,000 years older, and then you'll be like, but so, this is a spectacular space.
It is. I mean, it's the workmanship here is just spectacular.
So, Michael, you were pointing out this whale's tail design that we're seeing at the top of this capital here.
So all these elements have a specific name, and of course I don't remember what the name of it is, but there's a whale's tail here that we found on John Hancock's house, built in 1733. There's still capitals that exist from there. There's another house in Cambridge that has it. It's just in England one place as well.
Just be like a Texas oil guy putting an oil spigot
there
or something?
That's what I'm wondering. John Hancock dealt in whale oil, and that's what we initially thought. But now we're starting to see it all over the place because, it gives honor to the whale oil industry. Hmm. But I don't know. I mean, Boston probably had a major component of it. But I saw it over in England.
Interesting.
As well.
Also kind of the history of this chapel, this was like the wealthy chapel. This was the old money chapel. This was where the who's who of who had money came and did, everything they did with the church in this place. And so maybe it was an homage to some of that stuff, but was the whaling business, would that have been newer money? Would that have been a...
Definitely newer money, yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone had to light their spaces.
Their houses, yeah.
There's crude candles, which smoked a lot, but the whale's oil was the premier lighting.
Because it was clean burning.
It was clean burning and had a bright light.
I got to ask you, since you're a timber frame guy, are you impressed more by this kind of refined interior or the timber frame that's above us?
Well, both. I mean, there are two different aspects of it. You've got the framers who have to frame it, and then the finished carpenters who come in and work it all out. Mm-hmm. And just the proportions in these and knowing those proportions and doing it properly. Carving wood, there was a question earlier, stone or wood. I think I have a fellow, Ben Tabassi, who's trained as a stone carver, and he says it's far easier to carve stone because it's more uniform. You got the uniform density through the whole thing.
Breaking off.
Whereas these, you might encounter a knot, you have shifting grain from one place to another. One thought on carving both materials. But once you get accustomed to the material, then it's fairly easy to do.
So essentially, when you're looking at this space, it's just the trusses are supporting this opening, right? Like the only points of contact are here and there that are potentially holding anything up, and then the walls. So Michael, this is just a big timber framing challenge that you face in trying to make a big thing. And it's actually like a really good application for timber framing, right?
Yes, I mean, it's the only thing that they were using at the time for, yeah, for structural support of a roof.
Yeah.
Of this capacity.
And so we're about to see upstairs the King Post Truss holding up this space.
Let's check it out.
All right, so we've moved up into the spire of the King's Chapel. And so we're going to kind of continue looking around at what we're seeing inside here. The guy who's letting us in here, Miguel, was showing us up in the bell tower, and everyone's kind of looking at the bell, and I noticed Michael's off looking at the granite. So I figured that's a great place to start, just something you're seeing that all of us are missing.
Yeah, because it's an early granite structure, some of the early Susa granite. There's also a few houses around the area that were granite as well, but this is like 1740s. I forget the exact date on the building, but what you have is the basic part of the structure is all granite. So the granite is coming from Quincy, Massachusetts. As you look through the granite on these side walls, you see a red version. There's three different colors I've seen in Quincy granite: red, greens, and greenish grays. So this is probably coming from the upper parts of that granite plume that was sticking out, and so it's probably some of the earlier granite quarried from there.
And what are the smaller rocks they've got in there kind of supporting it? What is that going on?
Smaller rocks are like one of the most important parts, the chinking rocks, so that you have to chink everything to size so that it's all nice and leveled. But in Cambridge, Massachusetts, there's a Cambridge slate. So those are all Cambridge slates, so it's a very nearby, get access to it. Slates fairly easily, split up into thin sections, and it works perfectly for chinking.
Well, you were saying that this is some of the finest stonework at this period. Why?
Granite working. Granite is a very difficult stone to work. It's not like limestone or marble or softer. You can use chisels in a different way. Granite is pretty dense, and this is a very coarse grained granite, which makes it more difficult to split. But Quincy granite has a good tendency to split on nice cleavage planes, so you can get a nice square block out of it instead of it fracturing in various directions. So this is a hammered granite. If you look on the outside of the building, it's everything is hammered to a flat finish, but you can still see the pock marks of the chiseling. So that's very indicative of this time period.
So you're liking it because it's so original and the quality of the material?
Quality of the material, yeah. And I mean, think about building, I don't know what the height of this is, but if you look up there, there's at least 3 to 4 feet of granite to support everything.
Yeah, and then we've got these logs in here and one over there.
Yep, so these, you've got to have scaffolding to work off of. So they're called put logs, P-U-T-L-O-G-S. So, as you're building up, you're laying your granite or your brick, same thing in brick, but you embed a log into that, which ties into your scaffolding, and you build levels of scaffolding. You use, just round logs, round vertical logs, horizontal logs, and boards on top of that. So those are a place where they just sawed it off instead of removing it.
And the chimney, is there a reason they did the chimney in brick versus just because they had to go at that angle, they can get a better flue?
Better flue. So I don't know when the chimney, probably a wood stove, certainly. I don't know if it's still operational or not, but you can angle it because they had to change the direction it went because
it's got to miss
the dragon beam in the corner there that connects the
the
corner. So yeah, brick works very nicely for that.
Yeah.
So this is a piece of slate. I thought this would be super cool. That I've talked about slate a lot on the podcast. I really love slate because of the way it's so workable. I love, you can shave off the sides of it. You break it and cut it and work away with it. But these two holes are kind of like pre-punched slate, yeah. I guess is what it is.
Yeah.
And so when you're installing slate, unlike wood shingles or unlike siding or anything else, you're not necessarily fastening it to the building. You're hanging it. So it's like a picture. This slate is not actually being like pushed into the side of the building. It's actually just being stuck with two nails, two copper nails tacked in, and it just sits freely. And you're hanging it. So Mike, you were talking about the quality of this slate was really good.
So really nice quality slate. It rings very nicely. I don't know my slates well enough to know where it came from, but in this time period, it's very likely the church had a slate roof.
Yeah.
And it's easy because we're in Boston, we're right on the edge of the Atlantic Ocean. Wales is across the other side of the ocean. Wales has a lot of good slate quarries. And so it's easy, fairly easy transport. Once you get on a ship, you can move it very easily around.
So talk to us about the ringing. What do you mean that has a nice ring?
So you kind of hang it between a couple fingers, and usually you tap it with your hammer just to check it. It has a really nice bell sound. It's a little bit different than the Vermont slate, so it's a really good high quality.
You think
slate.
There's a whale slate?
I don't know.
You're guessing.
I'm guessing if it's the original slate from here, but you know.
Because if it's not original slate from here, it could have come from Vermont. It could have come from Pennsylvania. There's been a lot of different quarries that have been in the region.
In 1740, they wouldn't have hauled it from Pennsylvania.
I'm saying if it's not original.
Oh, you're not original. Yeah.
But if it is original, whale sounds like a good guess. I don't know. I wouldn't know anything about the original. But what makes slate such a good roofing material? Can you speak to that?
Well, it's a sedimentary stone. It's laid down in probably a pond, a lake, in layers. And because it's being laid in layers, then it gets compressed and built upon and sent further into the earth. You know, there's heat that's probably involved in it as well in terms of kind of like metamorphosis of it. So it starts out as clay, turns to shale, which is a very soft sedimentary stone. Then more compression, the more heat it gets, the turns into a slate. So it's compressing the minerals tighter and tighter together. The clay tends to be like platelets, flat platelets. So those platelets lay flat, and so it makes it easily split. I don't know if it's hard to see in the raking light, but there's a
grain coming.
There's a grain, but it's probably being punctured from up here. You use a very flat narrow chisel, and so it sends the forces down through here, and it just splits open. It's
unbelievable. One of the things that's so great about it is it sheds water really well, because it's essentially like you're putting a stone roof on the top of whatever structure you're using. Yeah. And so, you know, when Steve was explaining slate roofs to us, he was saying it's like a 100-year roof, maybe a 400-year roof, just depending on what kind of slate you get.
Quality, yeah.
And so the quality of the slate, the thing that comes there is just that compaction that you were talking about, is how much it actually has been compressed into itself. Because that is what is going to allow the water to get inside, the freeze-thaw cycle to then loosen that up and then break it off over time, as well as a tree limb falling on your house or acorns or whatever, breaking it up. It's become my favorite roofing material because I think it adds so much character onto a roof, more so than copper, more so than wood, more so than asphalt. Definitely asphalt, but...
Yeah, you can do so many different things with slate, too. You can put the date of the building in the slate. You can put the initials of the owner in the slate, you know, with different color slates.
Yeah. Okay.
When you say it has a good ring, if you were hitting one and it had a battering, would you reject it?
Yeah, you can reject it. And it depends on where the fracture is. You might be able to cut it into two smaller slates if it's, you know, just a simple fracture. Or if it's a little corner that's kind of broken off, then you'd recut it into, you know, a smaller slate.
If it doesn't
ring will mean that it's cracked or going to crack.
Yeah. Okay.
Or you can't see the crack.
All right, let's go.
Let's go into the trusses. On the Old North Church, they kind of did some reproduction timbers back in like 1901, and I was trying to explain what scalloping looks like on a properly hewn timber. This is what scalloping looks like. This is what that shape that you're going to get, because you can see the angle of where the broad axe fell along this timber, just taking away that last little bit of the excess in the outside of the board. And you can see it's a consistent pattern all the way down this whole timber. So just if the last episode you were watching and kind of confused on that, that's a much better example of kind of what I was looking for and why Brock and I were both looking at that reproduction timber and we're saying this was either adds or I don't know what happened.
What are we looking at? Looks like a really hefty timber frame.
It is. I don't know what the span is. I think we worked it out with Jack Sobin one time. It was like 50 to 60 feet.
Yeah.
So that's quite a span with timbers. So these trusses are common 17th and 18th century trusses where you have a...
Basically, the downstairs has been engineered so you have this huge expanse.
Yeah.
And you're seeing up here how it's being held up.
Right.
Right? Okay, sorry.
That's all right.
Because there's no columns that go down to support anything. I'm realizing, this is...
We're standing over a void right now.
Right, we're standing over a void, exactly. Yep. Sorry.
So,
I've never seen timbers this big. I haven't. Well, these are huge.
Well, they're all oak timbers, and of course, with the forest there they have, or the old growth forest that they're working out of, we don't know exactly where these came from. We could use dendrochronology as one way of sampling a building to sort out the date of when a tree was felled by looking at the growth rings and comparing that to a database. But through dendrochronology, you can also locate it through your analysis. You can match it up with what region it best identifies with. So it might identify with something on the farther north of here or farther south.
So does this mean that they got 55, 60 foot trees?
That was my question. Yep. I was thinking.
Yep. And then hewed them. Wow.
So do they even have oak trees like that today?
If you go farther inland, you know, Connecticut, eastern Connecticut has a good stand of trees.
Some I'm thinking of the oaks we have in Texas, and I'm like, this is like...
The live oak? Be about that long.
Yeah.
This is crazy.
So walk us through the integrity of what a King's Post trust is and what we're seeing here.
All right. Probably look at it through this way. So King Post Trust is a very basic trust. So there's the central post is the King Post. There's the bottom cord is the bottom timber that's here, and then the upper cord. And this type of trust has, you can refer to it a couple different ways. There's a double upper cord, where you have a curved lower upper cord and a straight upper cord, and that straight upper cord defines the roof plane, and onto which all the purlins fall. So then there's struts that go between it, so from the bottom of the King Post up to the bottom of the lower upper cord, and then from there on up into the supporting the roof rafters.
And then will you point out the purlins for these guys?
So purlins are everything, you know, the horizontal, this is a principal purlin, and the one above it is a common purlin.
So I'm looking at this curve right there of that post. Right? I mean, that,
yep.
would they find a tree that has a natural curve?
Yes.
Okay, so they didn't have a big thing and cut it out.
No, because you're not following the grain. Right. With these natural curves, the grain follows that curve. If you cut something, a curve out of a straight piece, you're interrupting the grain, it wouldn't be as strong.
So in shipbuilding, I remember there was a book where they would actually try to go out and find elbows in trees because they had to have special, you know, wanted to keep the grain because that's where the strength is. And that's kind of what they're doing there.
Yeah, so each one of these has a slightly different curve, depending on what tree it came from.
The curve is desired here?
Desired, I think so. I don't know what they might be thinking about it as an arch, mm-hmm. and thinking about the strength of an arch. I don't know that specifically, because later time periods, everything straightened out. They weren't using curved timbers anymore.
So Sobin was saying something along the lines of how it's almost like because it's a lower upper cord, that it's almost pushing against the upper cord, and that curve kind of gives it a little bow and a little flex to like push out against that.
Because how unique is this?
Well, in terms of survivals, there's the 1749 Plymouth County Courthouse has the same truss, a much smaller version. It's only 30 feet wide. There's another chapel or church on Nantucket that has this. It's a
late 17th
century.
Two others that aren't quite this big. I mean, this is is this the biggest?
This is the biggest one I'm aware of.
Because again, this is the King's Chapel. So this was the one where if the King came to the colonies, he would go here.
Right.
And so all of this would, correct me if I'm wrong, with the King would stamp certain pieces as like the King's wood. And
well, there's a time period when they were looking for masts for the ships, and so it would be, they'd have a broad arrow that was placed on it with an axe, but those are only the trees, the white pine trees, that were at a certain diameter, certain height, and absolutely clean of branches, because any branch is a defect in the wood, and especially with a mast, with the forces on a mast, you've got to have the top quality wood. So if we think about the, you know, look, little wide board, it has a lot of knots in it, and it's in the attic. You know, someone didn't offend the King by cutting that down, because the broad arrow definitely was not on that.
Right.
And you can imagine the frustration of colonists wanting to go out and, you know, clear their land, and they can't because the King's
got to call this tree.
Yeah.
I got dibs.
So basically you're saying this is one of the best timber frame roofs in America.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of variations, and there's a fantastic 1809 timber frame church over on Nantucket that has a very unique truss system. It's different than this. It's more of a queen post truss than a king post truss.
Yeah, and so is this metal?
That's metal.
And that's original?
That's original. So metal is used. It has a four-lock bolt in it. So this, it's kind of like a Morrison tenon, but as a wedge piece that goes and tightens up the bolt instead of a nut and threads. but that's it's a tension joint there, because what the King Post is, it's in tension, and it holds up the middle of the bottom cord. So it's all very difficult.
Is there a tenon that goes through there?
Yeah, there's still a tenon that goes through. It's a wedge, probably a wedge dovetail tenon. but it's still not strong enough to withdraw the to withstand the tension forces on it. So metal is a common, commonly used in that area.
Wow.
And so you can see a lot of these peg holes up there that are void of their pegs. Do you think that's just because people have come along over the years and either cut them off or just restoration?
Or it's just about to fall down.
Well, all those joints are in compression, so.
Right. They don't even need to be pegged.
Yeah.
Wow.
But it's bringing the forces from the roof all the way down through to the bottom of the king post.
And so that ghost mortise pocket there, is that probably was originally here?
Yeah, there would have been another strut from the side of the king post to the bottom of that pencil rafter.
There used to be walkboards right here where this notch is. Like, was this cut out? Like, you could walk across this and you had other boards running?
Yeah, I'm sure there must have been like joists and then walkboards on top of that.
That almost looks like a bird's mouth cut there. Is that what that is, or is that just a
cut? It has a slight, bevel to that cut.
Yeah, so that angle. Yeah, that would have been one of those joists where just trying to keep all the spreading forces from interacting with the truss.
Oh, I thought this was a full board right here. It connects right there.
There's a scarf there.
Okay.
So there is a scarf. So your first question about long timbers. So we do have a scarf joint in this area. I think it spans the other side.
Well, that's what,
is that scarfed?
That makes more sense.
Yeah, it's pulled apart a little bit.
Where's the?
That's even more impressive.
The end of the scarf?
I think it's right there.
Are you sure?
No.
Oh, I guess there it is.
No, that's the board sitting on top of it.
They wouldn't put this right over a scarf,
maybe,
right?
Maybe this one isn't.
Well, I don't know. If you talk to a structural engineer, they might have a different opinion on whether that's a good choice or not. But one of the things that the tenon does that goes through the bottom of the king post, it goes halfway across that joint between the scarves. The scarves are two pieces side by side, and they're going to pull apart in this incident. And it does have some pegs in there, but the tenon that's in the bottom of the king post crosses that boundary, and that's part of what keeps this from playing a part.
Wow. Unbelievable.
I mean, it's in such good shape, too. This looks
new. I mean, it looks 50 years old, right? It does not look that old.
It's just crazy to me that this is 300 years old, 280 years old.
Well, awesome. Okay, so as we were just looking down there, all crowded around the little hole in the floor, we're looking at the base of, in the main chapel, you'll see two columns spanning every so often along in the main sanctuary. And those columns are just one tree. Each of those columns is one tree. So it has all these ornate carvings on the top of it. It's fluted down the whole sides of it. No mistakes. You can't mess up once. And so how did they even do a full tree?
Well, they must have come from an area that had good-sized pine trees. They're pine. Yeah, but the other interesting thing about these columns is we couldn't quite find it.
Right.
I know it exists farther down. It's like a 3-inch diameter hole that's drilled through the entire length of the column. And that's because, what they're trying to do is they want that knot to crack. So as a tree shrinks, it's going to open up on the outside, it can't shrink into the middle. But if you drill out a 3-inch diameter hole, it'll shrink and that hole would be smaller.
And is that just getting rid of the pith? Is that all you're
doing? Getting rid of the pith all the way from one end to the other.
Who has a bit that long?
Yeah,
so it's a set of bits that you start with a small diameter hole. You line it up on a line so that you're going down the dead center. It's not a lead screw auger, but it's a kind of a nose auger where you have part of it is the limiter, and part of it is a cutter here, and this limits how deep it cuts. So you cut in and you pull out the shaving. It's like a slinky, and then you keep making it larger and larger through pod augers.
Wow.
So they're making wooden water pipe.
Did they meet halfway?
They might have.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that make more sense. But, yeah. And you just keep hooking rods onto it to, get through your length.
Oh, my gosh.
That's cool.
And is the pith softer than the rest of the wood?
In white pine, it's about the same.
Okay.
And there's slight softness difference.
Yeah. Wow. So it's not just going to automatically follow that. You kind of got to get your...
You got to get it straight. If you go off initially, you abandon it.
Imagine being halfway done and then we'll see it something to the side.
Yeah, we did some columns a couple years ago in the event room.
Yeah?
Yeah, for Memorial Hall.
Yeah, that's right.
1791 columns.
Right.
They were 7.5 feet long, so we didn't have to go too far.
Wow. So that's just one of the many things that you can see from creating a column and trying to make all of that make sense, and then structures like this holding it to support open that wide open space. Anyway, so that's the King's Chapel. Thanks for watching this episode of the podcast, and we'll see you in the next one.